welcome to another episode of the Monday Mile podcast. In this podcast, we're all about getting outside and encouraging you, our listeners, to join us whilst we walk and talk. Today we're in Holland Park and I'm joined by a man who recently brought the feel-good back to Saturday night television. He's best known as an Arsenal icon. However, more recently, his time on Strictly Come Dancing. Woo! He's overcome alcoholism, battled addiction, and is now a positive advocate for living life sober. Tony Adams, how are you?
What an intro. That was fantastic. Thank you. I've got to do two things at once, walk and talk.
I know. This is brilliant. It's a struggle. Yeah?
Brilliant.
It's all about the sideways conversation.
Therapy's great like that because there's a lot of people that do walking therapy. Sometimes when you're in a room, you know, person on person, yeah, with the psychotherapist or a counsellor, it's quite difficult to, you don't open up the freedom of walking and not having to, you know, like someone's not there and you're just talking to yourself. It's a very good tool for opening up, you know.
Have you ever done walking therapy?
I walk. It's been one of my tools from early. I've had the dog with me most of the time.
Where's the dog today? or the pigs?
I've had numerous dogs down the years, but I first got sober in '96, and I lived on Putney Heath, and I went over there, and it was great to let the mind go. And I just every morning, every evening, just walk. It was great. Walking therapy was fantastic. I did my talking in the one-on-one situation into an actual room, but the actual freedom of just getting out there and get perspective. I think you get perspective.
Yeah. Even hearing the birds sing, that's quite a nice sound. It's the sign that we're coming out of the depths of winter.
Well, I think it's a sign that you're open to stuff. You know, my life opened up. Before, I didn't hear the birds sing. You know, you're in your head so much. Before I actually cleaned up, you know, you don't smell the roses. You know, smell the roses, for God's sake. But you
now, know, take us back, Tony, for your new fans, the dance fans. Can you describe your career as a footballer?
My footballing career. Oh yeah, I did all right. You know, 1979, I joined the Arsenal, and we're going great guns at the moment.
Me too.
Got me Arsenal gear on. 1979, and I kicked a ball from a 6 years of age, and that's all. Like, I knew I'd be a professional. I knew I'd play. I loved bossing people around. I loved winning, and my dad said to me that at the time, I went to the Arsenal because I had the best coaches, you know, best people to teach you. And they had Don Howe and Terry Burton. And we had a fantastic, they got very lucky. We had six internationals in our youth team. Dave Rocastle, Michael Thomas, future internationals, you know, Noel Quinn, Martin Keogh, myself. Paul Merson. So there were six internationals and we got very lucky and we needed that competitive spirit. And in particular, Martin Keown, who's a presenter now and stuff, but we needed that thriving off of each other to be competitive. I want this to be the best podcast. I can't let go of my competitive industry. So I better stop talking a little bit.
Okay, right. Now, flipping the switch, for your football fans, can you take us back to November, December, and your time on one of the biggest television shows in our country, Strictly Come Dancing?
Well, I've said this before, it was terrifying, you know. It was absolutely terrifying, you know.
What bit of it was terrifying? Well,
everything. I'm completely out of your comfort zone. Where football, I had something, I was good at it. You know, I was good at football. I had tools, I'd practiced since I was six, you know. I knew my stuff, I knew my material. But going on to a show like that, I'd never danced before. I didn't know what it was, the American smooth was, or, you know, the samba. I didn't know that was straight leg and that was that. You know what I mean? It's like, I just did not have a clue. So when you're emotionally and mentally, because I'm talking physically now, physically I knew how to play football all day long, but yeah, mentally and emotionally, when I, before a game, feel a little bit kind of nervous, but you're kind of going, actually, I know how to do this stuff. I'm going to go out and do my stuff. With Strictly, you know, before that, especially before the first ever dance, you know, I'm like, you know, the panics, you know, severe kind of panic attacks. I'm going, oh my God, you know, where? And I've got no tools other than a couple of weeks dancing with my dance partner, you know. She's like, and I just completely froze, and my mouth, I couldn't get no, the top lip was sticking, and terrifying, you know.
You
can maybe see that through your own kind of snowboarding and stuff, you know, because you know how to do it, you kind of get confident with it, you know.
Confident in what you can do well, right? And then you thrive off that.
Exactly.
So to have that ability taken away from you.
Yeah.
How long did it take you to trust the process of learning a new skill? Because that's what it's all about.
It's different techniques, you know, different dances. It's like playing chess and playing backgammon, you know, they were different every time. Sometimes it was pointing down, sometimes it was pointing up. So, you know, I didn't realise it was so involved. Honest to God, I thought I'd just throw a few shapes on a Saturday night, Amy. Thought I'd just throw a few shapes and job done.
Bit of this, bit of that.
But little did I know there was more to it than that. You know, so I went in there with the purposes of spreading the message of mental health, especially men of my age that struggle to open their mouths. And I wanted to get the message out there and use Strictly platform, like you said, biggest show out there, use their platform to advertise this stuff and make us aware that, you know, men, you know, don't suffer in silence, come forward and speak, you know, and talk. Saved my life, you know, 29, I couldn't open my mouth. Now I can't shut up, but my mother-in-law gave me the number, and I phoned up my, when I saw this, I had the courage to, just when I was ready, just when I was beaten, I had the courage to go to the therapist and ask for help, you know, when I was completely broken. So I wanted to use Strictly platform for that, but little did I know that I had to do some dancing as well. So the minute I did that first time, I wanted out, you know, I was like,
but that
oh my
changed,
God, get
Tony,
me out
right?
Of here.
From the outside looking in, you
<I'm a good>
created such an impact. Your energy was infectious.
I
think the partnership from the outside between yourself and Katia Jones was incredible. How important is trust in that process of the partnership?
You know, I thought I was dancing on my own, you know. It was difficult to let...
You thought you were dancing on your own?
Yeah, I was. I was, because I didn't let her in, you know. I didn't know her. I didn't know who she was. I didn't know what she did. I didn't know she was as good as she is and everything. So I go back, and I kept saying to her every week, I go back to what I know. It's football. And she's like, hello, I'm here.
Yeah.
And it was not until about the last dance, actually, where I actually thought I was actually dancing with her. You know what I mean? And she said, listen to me, and I'll kind of guide you and
that
stuff.
That definitely changed, right? So,
yeah.
Because at the start, you're like rigid and stiff. But by week five, you're slinging her above your head and the smile on your face. How good does it feel post-match? It's like a game, isn't it?
You know, it's an experience, like I said, like prison, you know, to be up in a prison, comparing it to prison, but experiences.
That.
It was frightening and scary, and at times it was all right in there. I did a bit of drawing, I did a bit of painting, I had some me time, a lot too much me time, and I don't suggest that anyone goes to prison, but it's an experience, that's what I'm saying, and coming out of it, I look back with fond memories, you know. I made a lovely friend in Katia and you know, and I had a good dance, and it seemed like it spread the message. You know, when I walk in boardrooms now and stuff, it's they first thing they say is, can you keep your trousers on? You know what I mean? It's like the impact of that. You know, I never went out there to do that impact.
Yeah.
But it's had that kind of effect. I was worried when I went into the show that I'd lose my credibility in the boardroom when I'm going in dealing with companies and talking to people that need to get well, talking to home secretaries and things like this. You know, I thought I'd lose my kind of, I thought it would become a standing joke.
Yeah.
All the time, me and Katia was fighting that. We were fighting fighting not to be the comic show out of it. And she kept on wanting me because she knew, I think she saw a little bit of that I could dance, and I kind of just got silly, you know. When I can't do something, I just kind of mess about and stuff, you know. And she's like, no, you can do this, you know. And she wanted to show everybody that I could do it, and I was like, oh, don't worry about that.
The power of belief.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything is possible. You're a family man. Tell us about the Adams clan and that dynamic. Family dinners, skiing holidays. Seems like a pretty cool team to be a part of. How important is that side of your life, and how do you juggle the two? We've been walking for 10 minutes and already I've noticed a couple of people taking pictures of you.
Oh, wow.
How do you separate?
I'm Tony Adams, a human being now. I'm not Tony Adams, a footballer. I'm not Tony Adams, a dad. You know, I've got a more, you know, rounding existence, I suppose. I never put it into boxes. I've detached with love from, you know, from my children. They've got their own paths and they've got their own journey, and I'm just great that my relationships, because I think in life you've got kind of four corners. When I'm doing therapy, I always look at these four kind of big things. So financial, kind of work, they're kind of related, relationships and health. I think if you've got a bit of an issue in those kind of corners, I up my therapy. I start talking about, I've got relationship problems, maybe my son's doing this or my daughter's doing this or my wife's doing this, never me. But you know, it may be something that I need perspective on, so I talk about it.
When you say never you, when you're in therapy, does that therapy maybe help you come to terms with it, the fact that it actually might be you?
Yeah, it's paradoxical, isn't it? You know, you have to look after your own mental health. Yep. You know, we're responsible for that, and in turn that helps other people. So you keep your side of the street clean.
Yep.
If you keep your side of the street clean, that's what I try to do. I try to look after my stuff, and then I'm able to help other people. You know, it's the addict, and where I've come from is a really selfish existence. Really selfish. I put me first, you know. I couldn't give. I put my eldest boy behind the pub in there playing with a few cars back at the Checkers back in the day, and went out for a 3-day bender. You know, that's the way I was, you know. And to come in now full circle to help, you know, putting 600 people, just my business, through one-to-one therapy, Sporting Chances, 23 years old yesterday, you know.
Congratulations.
Thank you. 1,300 athletes we helped this year. You know, it's just amazing. And I did that, but I didn't do that. I orchestrated it at the beginning, you know. I needed to grow. I got the trustees in place. I got the therapist in place, you know. I did the growing of it. And then you kind of get back and you look after, and that's only by looking after me I've been able to help other people. You know, it's like the aeroplane. You've just been on an aeroplane, haven't you? They tell you to put the mask on first, don't they? They don't say put your mask on, and you say put your own mask on first.
That's,
and then you can help everyone else.
Analogy.
There you go.
I like that.
You like that?
Yeah.
There you go.
You speak very openly about your journey with alcoholism and addiction. When it comes to family, you mentioned your boy there. Your eldest boy, Ollie?
Yeah.
How did and how do you go about approaching that subject with your kids and saying, hey guys, I'm an alcoholic? Was that tough?
They were very small at that point. You know, we're talking 26 years ago now. You know, I think Claire, my stepdaughter, she was about 10, and then Ollie was about 5. And then Amber was a couple of, you know, year or so when, and my wife, I put my first wife into treatment, and then she got a bit clean and sober and threw me out because I was a practicing alcoholic at that point. So she kind of said, I'm not coming home to you, you're off. But then the roles reversed, because I got clean and sober in the August that year, and then she relapsed, and in 98, 2 years into my sobriety, she was to talk about the illness of addiction. We go down and down and down, we get periods of abstinence, but her path was going down and down. So I took the kids at the mother's house and I brought them up. But the good news in all that is my first partner's She came out of Holloway Prison in 2014, and she's not had a drink or drug since that Christmas, and she's doing really well, and she's back in the kids' life today. But how did I go about telling them? I remember my stepdaughter, when she was about 14, sitting, driving in the car, and I going, you know, part of the 12-step program is there's a men's step. There's a lot of healing that needs to go on because I did a lot of mistakes and I made a lot of stuff that I'm not proud of. But so I had to kind of heal, and I'd hurt a lot of people in the process. So I needed to heal me, and I needed to then say kind of sorry to everybody else, you know. So part of that process, and I said to her, look, I'm really sorry, Claire, you know. This is the way I was, and now I'm living a life of sobriety and peace and love. And she said, you and Mum were nutters. She said, I'll never do that. You know?
Yeah.
So, and negative, it's turned into a real positive for her. She kind of looked at the sickness and kind of gone, whoa, you know, I don't want that.
I don't want to be like
exactly.
that.
Exactly. So,
is it true that it can skip a generation?
My grandfather was a very angry alcoholic. Very, very rageaholic. And my mum and dad were, you know, they were... I think the genetic makeup of my parents were very driven. My dad was very driven. He kind of held it all in, like that generation. I was taught very early how to suppress. You know, I saw it in my mother and father. We didn't talk about anything. You know, when I had panic attacks at school, you know, I didn't have the capability to come home and go, oh, we didn't sit around the table in the evening and talk about our stuff, you know, like I do with my kids now. So
is that how you manage the balance with your kids? Like your youngest, for example?
Yeah.
Is she aware of your, you know, previous struggles with addiction?
Oh, I thought my brilliance.
No.
Well, my brilliance and my football career and my dancing career. But my alcoholism, it's all me, isn't it? You know, I can't stand out part. I can't stand outside of that and say, look, this just went on.
Yeah.
You know, when I did both my books, you know, and especially Addicted, I put it all in there because it was all me. And people kind of get, some people go, oh my God. You know, why did you put all that rubbish in there? I said, well, that's what happened. Yeah, and there's no more skeletons in the closet. You know, I'm completely free. I can walk down this street and no one's going to go, you turned me over. You had this, you did this. You know, you just said it. I get photographs. People were actually spreading the love, you know, if only they knew her. If only they knew.
Do you believe by speaking out and being open and being honest is the key to managing addiction?
Oh, the opposite of addiction is connection. We need to, I need community. I think this illness wants me on my own and it wants me dead. Quite frankly, I've seen it too many people. Too many people die, unfortunately. Not a lot of people make it. And for me, they've all gone into isolation. They've all stopped maybe going to meetings, going to AA, NA, GA meetings. You know, 60 fellowship groups out there at the moment. But they've all withdrawn, gone inside again, stopped communicating, stopped talking. The shame, it's a shame and fear-based illness.
That's terrifying.
Yeah.
Does it still scare you?
No, as long as I keep doing what I'm doing, you know, as long as I keep talking, going to meetings, talking to my therapist, you know, I've got no, it's changed for me, you know, we can swap our addictions. My first CEO, you know, who's 19 years without a drink, started gambling, and then gambling, he mortgaged his house, wife threw him out, within 6 months he's drinking again, he's dead. You know, that tells me, actually, I can't swap my I can't start gambling all of a sudden, you know. I've got to be aware, I've still got that illness inside of me, you know. So sugar and I don't know, exercise as well, you know. It's a balance. I strive for balance today, you know. I think it's the opposite of what I used to be like. I used to and I don't think that's particularly good for your mental health.
Do you believe that go get allowed you to be the player you were?
Oh, without doubt. If you've got that inside of you, use it. I tell all of the athletes that I speak to and all the people that use what you're good at.
Yeah.
You know, they use it.
Addiction to perfection, right?
Absolutely. My psychotherapist always used to say to me, he said to me, Tone, you know, you got that part of your life working. How did you go about that? Then put it into your relationships, put it into all that. But it's certain things. For instance, I play backgammon with my wife and she's better than me. So growth for me in the early days, the ball went up in the air. I'm never playing with you again because I can't win. Now, with time and stuff, I can play and
does she still beat you?
Yeah, of course.
And but how do you deal with that? When
it's okay,
does.
I'm all right.
Yeah, you're
I'm
cool okay. with it?
I'm cool with it, yeah.
You sure? Right.
Yes, I prefer not to play backgammon with her. I prefer not to dance,
it's
to
right.
be honest with you.
You can play backgammon with me. I don't know how to play.
That's perfect. Perfect.
Success.
Let's do it. Success.
So you're happy. I see the smile.
There you go. There's a serious side in all this because when I was sick, I surrounded myself with sick people. And I wanted everyone to be divorced or worse than me. You know what I mean? I wanted them to be worse, which
Why
propped
is that?
Me up. It made me feel better than. I know today I'm no better, no worse than any other human being. Okay. But I did. My emotions were competitive, like my football career. Yeah, I was like, I'm better than him. I'm better than him. He's only a cameraman. You know what I mean? That ego.
That's
that ego
strong,
gets you.
Though, and that then, acceptance of that. You've okay, basically exactly. just admitted that you thrive
yeah.
in an environment where you're champion.
Yeah. Exactly. So I think the secret is that I'm aware of it all today. You know, most people are kind of unconscious of all this stuff. You know, yeah. I've got the fog cleared and I've got consciousness and I have to reflect on a daily basis through meditation and stuff how I am in the world today. You know what I mean? So, and I know I've got that capability. So I'm very careful that I remain humble and not get my, you know, the ego is not your amigo. You know, when it comes from humility and self and doing your best on something, then we're in the right area.
Yeah.
You know, that's fulfilling and I get a lot of, it's like helping someone and telling no one about it, you know what
yeah,
I mean? Doing
yeah.
a good deed, self-esteem, because my self-esteem was on the floor, self-worth, you know, I got all my taps on the back for who I was and not who, you know, so what I did and not yeah. who I was, you know? So I got all my pats on the back, oh, you're a great footballer, you're great, great, great. And all the time, the self-esteem's down here, the ego's up here. So over the years, I've tried to
manage to balance them.
Get it up.
In the short period of time I've known you, I'd describe you as a humble,
thank you,
gentle giant. You're a gentleman.
Thank you.
You mentioned the word balance, and it's about juggling all the different pillars of your life. Going to therapy now, for somebody that is struggling,
yeah.
how have you managed to balance those different sections and in these therapy meetings?
I'll tell you a story. My therapist for a long time was in Earl's Court down the road here. And I used to...
That way.
Earl's Court, going up there. And I used to work, my flat was in Westbourne Gardens, which is that
up
end.
There,
so
yeah.
I went that way. And I tell you, it's better. I've skipped, when I've had a good dump,
yeah.
when I've shared my stuff, when I've kind of got it all out, I've actually skipped up here, up this path, skipped up the path, and it's better than any drink or drug that I've ever taken.
Wow.
Absolutely. I've just had a and you're sucking it in and the joy of, who's got a better life than us today, huh? You know, this is just
blessed.
Absolutely,
grateful.
Absolutely grateful, blessed. You know, it's just wonderful. It's just wonderful. So people, if you are, you know, you just get your mouth open, go and see someone, go and talk to someone. You know, my company now has a service whereby you get a nurse and she's been 20 years in the game and she does an hour consultation with you to get to the root cause of your stuff,
yeah.
you know, well, the presenting issue, so we can match you up with the right
Person.
Therapist. Yeah, that's also very important. So it's another thing that I do is putting people together, you know, get them in the right area to get well. Because, you know, someone that's severely depressed, someone's who's got addiction, and they're never on their own. They don't come on isolated. They just don't, you know, fear comes with anxiety. They all come kind of together and stuff, you know. So, and you've got to have the appropriate therapist. You know, mental health waiting lists are through the roof at the moment, you know. 374,000 under 18s on the mental health waiting list, you know. And we don't actually deal with children, but we signpost to family members because it's a family illness. God, I've got too much to say, and I am sorry.
This is good. But in terms of the balance you've created, what are the pillars that have allowed you to be cool, to be good?
I don't think it's a good or bad thing. You know, I must say this as well. It was, I was sick, and now I'm a little bit well. I'm a bit weller. Yeah. That's all we've got at a time, haven't we? That's what we're doing here. I'm here present with you today. I'm not thinking about where I'm doing lunch or what I've got to do tonight or, you know, next week or got Friday. I'm here with you. We're having a walk.
Presence.
It's great. We're having a walk and then we're having a talk.
Tough to
and we're here with acceptance. I love that. I picked up on what you said earlier. But acceptance is the key for me, you know. We are right here. This is where I'm meant to be. I feel like I'm in the right place, in the right business. I've got health stuff that I need to look at, and sugar levels are a bit through the roof. But, you know, I've got good relationships with all my kids. They all talk to me. You know, I've got them to this age, and they all, like, kind of, I think they actually quite like me.
You're a cool dad.
Dear. Oh, thanks, Ray.
You are.
Yeah. I quite, you know.
You've got a powerful clan. You've got a good gang. It'd be cool to be part of the Adams family. It's not your average family.
Boom, boom.
Talk to me about sugar, because that's also something that we as a nation are addicted to, and without realising, every single day our consumption is through the roof.
Yeah.
Processed foods.
You know, I've just got to be aware of my diet. The exercise is so important. You know, we're going to go back to balance here a little bit. I think we try to change because sometimes mad, sad, or glad. You know, life happens, and stuff comes up. And I'm going to take you back when my mum died of bone cancer. God, it was painful. Really painful. I was clean, sober about 4 years. And she didn't deserve that. She was a good woman, really good woman. And 9 months it took her, and I just held her hand and cried a lot with her, and I had the ability to cry. I'd never cried until I sobered up at 29, but I was floods of tears, and I cry all the time now. Legally Blonde, I cried the other day, watching Legally Blonde, because she's still doing this speech, and I'm like in floods of tears, and my kids are looking at her, like, oh. Anyway, that's a different story, but yeah, I don't know where I was then, but.
Sugar, addiction.
Yeah.
Different types of addiction.
I try to share my experiences, you know, and not my opinions. Opinions get argued with, yeah. But changing the way, sugar, it does that, you know, it changes the way that you feel. Food, and I'm very conscious of that, and I try to stay with the feelings today. You know, and it's a great, I often say it, it's the greatest gift that I've ever been given, that I don't act on any thought or feeling. I'm not my thoughts and I'm not my feelings. I'm not responsible for my first thought. You know, I've got time, I'm not impulsive, you know. I see something, makes me angry. Oh, my first game back was against Derby away.
Yeah.
Okay, Darren Powell, first game back for Arsenal, was clean and sober. And I'd suppressed this anger for so long. And I'm not using anything like sugar or alcohol, and it's all my feelings are through the roof. And he's going down this, and I've just come across taking him out, took him about that high, straight red card.
Wow.
I'm off the pitch, and I'm going, oh, I'm going to have to do something about this. You know, I'll lose my job if I keep getting sent off every week. So I had to kind of look at that and the appropriate way of dealing with anger.
Is that acceptance and that contentment something that you've learned through therapy?
Yeah, I've learned it all through the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous and in one-to-one therapy. I've learned about me. You know, my therapist's job, he says, not me, he says, was to get me to become my own best psychotherapist. You know, if I can see how I am in the world today and kind of just be with that, mad, sad or glad, you know, with them feelings, whatever it is for you today. I was a little bit sad on Saturday. Saturdays have been, it's kind of match day, you know, in the past. And I've always felt a little bit, I think it's lonely. a little bit lonely, a little bit, because I used to have the fix on a Saturday, yeah. You know, I used to have fix.
Chasing that
great,
high.
You know, and you get into routines and stuff, and I and, you know, having a Byron's burger and stuff, I'm advertising here, but I think they've gone under, so it's all right. But you know, and the Oreo milkshake, you know, all of a sudden,
that was,
you know,
your
and it's
go-to.
Like, it's a little bit of a reward. You know, I don't eat all of a sudden and then I'm eating it, or if I'm lonely and depressed, you know, the food kind of goes up. I eat on my emotions, is what I'm trying to say. So I'm aware of it, so you can stop it.
Yeah.
You know, you can change. You can change. If the consciousness is the important thing here. Until you get perspective and you can start talking about this stuff, you're living in denial, you're living in a world that is unreflected, and you're just being impulsive, and you're just doing, you're letting your head rule your being and ruining your life. And I don't live like that.
So today, when it comes to eating your emotions, I think a lot of people can definitely relate to that, myself included. When you go to eat that burger or drink that Oreo milkshake, what is it that makes you stop? Or do you not?
No. Sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. And we're not, you know, this is high level now, you know.
Yeah.
For me, I'm not eating 20 million burgers every day, you know, I used to get drunk.
Little burger
all the
here
time.
And there is good for you, right?
Exactly.
Maybe we'll go and get a burger after this, right? It's the balance.
It's balance again,
you
know.
We've walked.
For me, I feel when you have to, and I take time in a day to have a look at what's going on, and I think in those periods you can get a kind of little bit of a bearing, a consciousness, and it's right in the gut. And if you're not sitting and slowing, you've got to slow down first and you've got to sit. And I go into my front room sometimes, some in the morning for 10 minutes. I tried all types of meditation down the years. I've done TM and everything, but I just like breathing. It's been done for millions of years, this. It's just, exactly, close my eyes and I go, what's going on? What's happening? You know, what's happening? Self-reflection, you know, just breathing. Just 10 minutes, you know, mate. Even I do it walking, I do it in the bath. You know, they're good meditation times. This, if I was on my own and not talking, because this is a different, this is talking therapy, and I don't need to see my therapist today because I'm kind of a...
You're with the fuller.
I'm done.
We're
I'm with the fuller.
Dump it all on me, Tone.
But there's occasions where even, you know, when you're walking through this park and you're not talking, you're kind of reflecting on what's going on for you today, and you kind of, okay, you know, am I eating too many burgers? Or, you know, you soon get to know, you know, how do I deal with that relationship? Well, what's the issue for you going on at the moment? And if you don't have them periods of reflection and meditation, how do you know? You're just going from one thing to the other, aren't you? You're going one
boom, going boom, boom. And I think the chaos of life can just take you.
Absolutely.
So it's a self-awareness, pulling out and looking at yourself.
There you go.
And zoom in, zoom out, perspective.
Exactly. And then spread the love. You know, stop and talk like these people, and they're talking to each other.
There's,
you know,
dogs
communication,
having a little
scrabble. Connection. Communication and connection. And they feel better about themselves today. You know, self-esteem's gone up. Humility. You know, you've done something. Oh, you're looking well today. You've got a lovely hat on.
Complimenting people. Yeah. That's a nice trait.
Yeah, good job.
What's your routine like day to day, having come from a professional sporting background to now, you know, running a successful business?
Thank you.
How do you balance?
And charities and Six Addiction Trust will open up later on in the year.
Wearing the hat, represent.
Perfect.
TA number
get
six.
Get over, watch the Arsenal. I usually work about a week at a time. Yeah, I've got into a habit now, which is a great habit, on a Sunday evening, reviewing my week.
Yeah.
And kind of making sure that it's spaced out enough that I've got time for golf and walks and reflection and a bit of work here and a bit of work there and meeting here without cramming it full with stuff, because I can do that also. But just seeing if there's a nice balance through the week so I'm not rushing to one thing and doing another thing, you know, just have the... And then I just go and live it, you know, and try to get a bit... I felt the structure is part of what I've been good at for years. I was organising the back four for years, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I know, I struggle with the spontaneity.
Yeah, but
that's
you need to create the time within a structure and a schedule to have the fluidity and freedom. And those are the days where the best moments happen.
Absolutely.
Because you can just roll with it. Roll with whatever life gives you.
Exactly. To do no thing, you know. I can be very busy, you know, when I can, it's usually when I'm uncomfortable or, you know, I kind of go, oh, I've got to do this, got to do that, got to, this fear of missing out, all those kind of stuff. And, you know, oh my God, someone's having a better life than me. No.
So Sunday's a bit of structure and a bit of preparation. What's your relationship like with Monday?
It's just another day, to be honest with you. It's just another day.
Just rolling with it.
Well, I had a talk yesterday, spreading the word again yesterday. You know, I'm into Tuesday. You know, I'm having a good day today.
I'm
meeting another lad for lunch, doing some more chatting. Living a great life, mate. You know, it's great. We're free as a bird.
We are
free as a bird.
We both are, aren't we?
We got it sorted, mate, you know.
Do you have any life mottos or quotes that you can share with our listeners as a takeaway?
In Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I've learned all this stuff through group therapy, and it sorted out my addiction. I love fellowship groups. It's given me a program for life. The 12-step program's given me a program for life. I often say that my therapist saved my life, but AA and group therapy and 12-step program has given me a life. So I live my life by them. They've got certain acronyms in the fellowship. There's things called Easy Does It, First Things First, Let Go and Let God, Acceptance is the Answer to All Our Things. You know, there's little kind of nuggets of gold, real wisdom that's in. It's a spiritual program, but they've taken bits out of different religions and stuck it all in together. There's a bit of Christianity, there's a bit of Buddha, there's some wise things from thousands of years. You know, the Bill W, who wrote the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, the first 164 pages, he did in one sitting.
Wow.
He did it in one sitting. It's never been changed to this day. And he wasn't a writer. You know, he was a salesman. That's good. For me, that was God-given. There's so many pearls of wisdom in there. We talk about the promises, you know, fear of insecurity and financial insecurity, it will leave you. You know, intuitively, to do things that used to baffle me. You know, intuitively now I do things that used to baffle me. That's one of the promises that I get if I do these steps. So I'm a massively grateful, I think, for the 12-step program and Bill W. He's 1935. You know, he's been going a long time now, and it's absolutely free. You know, so if you're really struggling with an addiction, or you feel you're struggling with your gambling or your drink, go to a fellowship group. Seek it out. It's free as a bird, and that's the first port of call for all of us, to be honest with you.
Would you say one of the first steps in making that move forward is self-acceptance, actually admitting to oneself that you have a problem with addiction?
Correct.
How did you do that?
It happened to me rather than me acknowledging. I didn't know anything about the therapy, about 12 steps, about Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't really. All I knew is that I was in so much pain, didn't want to be on the planet. Didn't want to be here, it was too painful. I had nothing left. I lost my dignity, my self-respect. I was at death's door. I did 29 and I didn't want to be here. And
that's
something
so young,
happened.
Tony.
Something happened. Spiritual moment of clarity. I just did from the somewhere in the pits of my stomach, I went help. I just went help. And I've not had a drink to this day.
That's incredible.
Not had a drink to this
Thumbs
day.
Up to that. So it kind That's of to be celebrated.
So it came. So when I was broken, when I was ready, when I totally surrendered, you are correct. The first step was for me to go, and that happened somewhere in there.
Okay, now let's get into this. So for those that are listening right now, that are maybe struggling with addiction, how can they admit it to themselves?
Well, I think they've got to go on their own journey. They've got to go on their own journey, and I will push them into a meeting. I say that to anybody, go and have a look. It might not be for you, but if you don't know, it's contempt prior to investigation if you don't go and have a look. So I will put them all, and then hopefully they'll get some self-discovery.
Yeah.
You know, kind of going, oh, because we get sober, and I stay sober, by hearing other people's stories. So if I'm speaking to someone and I've shared my story about my addiction today with you, if someone's gone, oh, you know, what I did, one-to-one therapy and addiction group. It's like someone texted me the other day, said, Tone, I'm really struggling. I went, he said, how did you do it? I said, well, one-to-one therapy, my life stuff, addiction, AA. That's what I do, group therapy, one-to-one therapy.
Are you proud of where you stand today as an advocate of living clean?
You know, I'm just doing the best I can here, you know what I mean? It's like a day at a time. I'm incredibly blessed, you know, I'm free as a bird, you know, I can do anything I want to do today. And yeah, I don't know why me, but I've been given this gift and I'm not going to let it go.
Don't let it go.
I'm not going to let it go. You know, it's a wonderful thing.
Tony Adams, I want to say a massive thank you for joining us here on the Monday Mile Walk and Talk podcast. Thank you for your...
And I did talk.
...openness, your vulnerability...
Thank you.
...and all of your chat. I tell you what, if there's one thing I've learned from this, I love a chat. And I'm going to keep talking because
exactly. You're
too right. Talking is the way out of any problem. Monday Mile listeners, that is a wrap. Thank you so much for tuning in to this very special episode. You know what to do. Make sure you subscribe, listen to the audio, and we will be dropping every single Monday. Have an absolutely wicked week.